WLOB 100.5 FM.
Where's Ari?
Oh, Santa.
Come on, girls.
Santa, if you get this letter, won't you help me out? I know you're kind of busy with your elves right now, and I don't know how you do the things you do when I sleep on Christmas Eve. But it's amazing, and I bet that you could bring me back my baby, because every time I say Christmas lights, I feel this void inside and I just can't take it. I saw them shopping last week.
It is 7:05. You're listening to 100.5 FM. Good morning. I'm Ray Richardson. Thanks for joining us. Dee Dee Richardson and Owen McCarthy are in the house. Good morning.
Good morning.
How we doing?
Excellent.
Little Santa.
Yeah.
You like Santa?
I'm fired up. Yeah.
I love Santa too.
We're dancing at 7 a.m.
Absolutely.
In the morning. Yeah.
I usually dance at 6. So, absolutely. Owen's running for the Republican nomination for governor. We'll be voting on that next June. And if he prevails, he'll be the candidate in November. Obviously, people like me are looking for big change here. We like business people and that kind of thing. His website is owenformaine.com. Owen, let's talk some policy here. Affordability has become the big word here.
Yeah.
But let's break that down. What does that mean? We're number two in tax burden in the country, which is different than high taxes because it means based on ability to pay. We're number two in highest burden. Our neighbor to the west, New Hampshire, is 46th in tax burden. Our electricity rates are through the roof through poor public policy. Housing has gone skyrocketing, which is good for somebody selling, but it's not good for somebody buying. We have still have some young families here, and they're wondering if the dream of owning their own castle is going away. I don't know which one of these, and there's a bunch more we could hit. Our education is suffering. But let's talk about affordability to start with. Which one of those do you want to try to tackle, or do you have a different one?
Well, let me just even put it in a little more perspective. I just did this mock budget out for the average family of four in the state of Maine, 2018 versus now. And 2018, you take the money in, so the income, you subtract the taxes, you subtract everything. Everyone has about $500 a month that they're able to save, give or take, depending on where you're at.
Right.
Now, if you do the average for everything across the board, everyone's losing $1,000 a month. That's unsustainable, right? Like that is hard to figure out. And I'm sure people are figuring out how to scrape by because they're cutting things and they're tightening up, but they're feeling like they're getting worse off because they are over time. And so where do we make the biggest difference on that as governor? I think the three levers you have, or four, is we got to have better paying jobs long-term here because you make more money. And then you get to cut into energy, housing, and taxes are really the three levers you have for affordability. So let me take energy to start as one example. Third highest energy costs in the country right now. It's grown the fastest the last 5 years, and it's all policy decisions.
All policy.
The market right now for consumer electricity in Maine is $2.5 billion. $250 million of that is solar subsidies. So 10% of that is solar subsidies. So that is ridiculous.
How's that working out for Maine?
Yeah, that's not good. And we contract to buy it at 20 cents a kilowatt or higher, which is much higher than any other sources. And so that's hitting you. And it doesn't work in the winter. Like, snow happens, it gets on them. So what do we need to do? We need to truck in LNG or oil into Cousins Island at 10x the cost, and that averages out the whole year. And so for me, one is we need to cut the net energy billing program, right? Like, people can build solar, it just needs to make sense to build it without any subsidies, right? Like,
that's the whole thing. I'm not against solar.
Yeah.
Owen McCarthy, you want to put solar panels in your home? God bless you.
I don't, but
do it yourself.
But for sure. Yeah.
Do
yeah,
it yourself.
Yeah. Go for it. Put them up. Make it happen.
I mean, we're making poor people pay for rich people to have solar panels so they can virtue signal.
Yeah. And so that, okay, so you got to cut that. Two is, where do you get lower cost base layer energy? There's really two shorter term options. I'm really bullish on a longer term one. Shorter term, it's we either need to work with the federal government to convince Massachusetts to build the natural gas pipeline here, right? Like, we are using all the gas that we're getting right now, and that we need more coming in.
And Maura Healey, the governor of Massachusetts, who was attorney general, blocked two pipelines. She has softened her language over the last eight
months.
She
said she didn't block the pipelines.
Well, exactly.
But she did block the pipelines.
I have the tape of her bragging about it. I played it the day she said that. But she has softened a great deal on it now. But then you still have Kathy Hochul in New York, who is being very obstinate. We were hoping that maybe President Trump would trade a wind farm for a gas pipeline.
Right.
So far, that hasn't happened.
That's one. The other option is we need to continue to buy. I know there was controversy of building the lines that has more capacity coming from Canada. Go buy more hydro from Quebec.
Sure.
Right? Like, I think day one, we're flying up there and we're negotiating a longer term contract with more energy and at lower cost that will ideally you knock out those plants that we need in the winter. Right? We bring enough base layer energy in that right. We don't need to flare those up because those are the highest cost of electricity and those get spread out throughout the year. That would give relief to a lot of people and make it easier to build businesses here.
Paula Page talked about that his entire time in office,
yeah.
Buying more hydro from Canada.
Yeah.
But, you know, with the problem that you face is the 2009 law that caps renewables from outside of Maine at 100 megawatts, that's got to go.
That's got to go. The RPS.
It's got to
go. Yeah, that is. Only up to 100 megawatts is hydro renewable. Like, that's the most.
It's just crazy.
Illogical thing.
Well,
right?
I mean, I had some of the people in when this was going on, you know, because I'm old and so
yeah,
I was around.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, this is to protect renewable businesses parochial. I'm like, no, we need energy here.
Low-cost energy will protect business, period.
Right, sure. Right?
Like, businesses will grow, businesses will come here. Like, it won't, not just a little fraction of a business. It will impact everyone. And so,
if you have abundant blood in your body, are you better off or worse off?
You're better off.
So, if you have abundant energy, are we better off or worse off? It's the same concept. Energy is the lifeblood of America's economy.
Long-term, and it's similarly, this is going to take a lot, but I think public sentiment is going there. I'm really bullish on small modular nuclear. Like, I think,
yeah.
I mean, when I say long, these are 5 to 10 year projects,
right? Sure.
Right? So, you know, we need some short term wins because people need relief now. And then we also need to plan ahead and look to the future and say, well, how can Maine be energy independent potentially? Right? Like these are projects that are popping up everywhere. We actually have the talent here. Portsmouth Naval Shipyard, Kittery,
sure.
Has been doing small modular nuclears on submarines forever, almost.
Exactly. Since the 60s, at least.
Correct. And they're safe. We know we have the tradespeople that can do it. We have people who can build it. We have training there. Maine Maritime Academy is starting a nuclear engineering minor, actually, that just is popping up. Like, I think that is the solution for the medium to long term. And I get pushback sometimes on this, right? And people say, well, you know, what about Maine Yankee or whatever? They got shut down. I'm like, look. Has technology, like, was there a smartphone back then? Has technology changed right. since the early? Yeah, same with nuclear. Nuclear technology got safer. It uses less fuel. You can use spent fuel from the other stuff. It is, and it's low cost. And
right.
if you care about carbon, there's none of that, right?
Right, exactly.
So it's like a win-win all the way around.
It's just fear-mongering is what it is. The Tennessee Valley Authority, which I talk about this all the time, arguably the best thing that came out of the New Deal. I'm not a big New Dealer, but that's been a sustainable project. They've been using small modular nukes for a while now there because you got to generate energy.
Right.
We have a growing population,
right?
Not necessarily naturally, but because we've imported 40 million people illegally.
Yeah.
We have a growing population, greater energy demands. There is, as you know, in the law, referendum that requires
correct.
A referendum.
Yep.
I ask you guys.
You can't even do a feasibility study.
Right. I ask you
which
guys.
Which is
this
the first
September.
Thing to turn over.
Well,
yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
You have to do a feasibility study.
Right.
I mean, that's what common sense dictates.
Yeah.
But I ask you guys in September because it's not written into the Constitution. It's just statute. So would you be willing, and I asked you this before, and I don't recall your answer,
yeah.
but would you be willing to sign a revocation of that referendum into law if
yes.
the legislature presented to you?
Yes. And
it's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. And we got to do the feasibility study. Let's start there and then go to the next step. And I actually, I haven't done any polling, but I think about different groups. Like the 20 to 45 year olds are all like, the swing and the miss on nuclear was one of the worst things that we did. Right. Like people
sure.
are like, it doesn't make sense. Like nuclear is good. The Republicans are all seem to be behind nuclear from what I understand.
Yeah.
The environmentalists, because of AI data centers, the demand on energy I've started to see some like influencers come
right.
out and say, well, nuclear might be okay. You know, it's the answer. It's really just some of the people that remember the past that will be the
Three Mile Island.
Yeah.
How many
yeah.
people died there?
It worked, right? Safety. This.
I believe the number was zero. Yeah,
correct.
I believe it's correct.
Yeah.
So yeah, was that great? Of course, it wasn't great.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
But you know, that was what, 76?
Yeah.
49 years ago.
Right.
Things have gotten better.
Right.
We have better ways to monitor. I mean, we just operate in a culture of fear here. We've got to stop doing that. We talked about hydro earlier.
Yeah.
As you know, there's a deal on the river with Nature Conservancy. They want to pull down dams. It's probably going to cost the mill. They're probably going to close it because they can't generate electricity in the way in which they need to. What are your thoughts on that? If you were governor right now, what would you be doing?
Everything possible to stop the removal of the dams. I actually, the Mid-Main Chamber, if anyone wants to dig it out, did an economic impact report of the dams. It's on their website.
Right.
And there, if you look at what's Sappy and all the employment and everything that relies on the dams, I think it was like $1.5 billion of the GDP of the state.
Yeah, of course. It's enormous.
$90 billion GDP.
I mean, the multiplier effect out of the mill, depending on who you talk to, is either 4-1 or 8-1.
Right.
And that's how deep you go into the woods with it. But a 4-1 multiplier from the economic output of the mill is enormous.
Yeah. Well, right. I mean, we're reaching up to Patton, Maine, where I grew up for the mill. I mean, I remember going down there taking logs with Dad, and now with woodland slowing down and the hits we've had in the paper industry and the lumber market's always up and down, not having Sappy would basically kill the paper industry in the state of Maine.
Have you looked at, if you were governor today, what kind of maneuvers legally you would be able to do to stop this nonsense?
No, it's interesting. I mean, I think there would be, I don't know about legally. There's a you could put a bill in that had a moratorium on it. Our colleague and other gubernatorial contender Jim Libby has done just that. And so I think that I sent him a note the day it happened and said, Jim, that was the right move.
Absolutely.
And we'd be in my mind, you know, you'd be rallying around that. We're coming up on, you know, you get elected governor, first thing you do is build a budget. The budget requires, if you veto it, 2/3 to overcome it, you can really make an impact with that kind of leverage to say, like, look, this is important to making sure that you get whatever you get in the budget. And so, to me, that's the biggest thing you can do.
So you believe there may be some legal maneuvers that a governor could do to stop this from happening, even though the state's involved in the negotiation in this right now?
Yeah.
It's crazy. Okay. So you're completely against removing the dams, just so we're
That's
clear.
That's right. I'm completely against removing
the
dams.
Okay, just wanted to be clear about that. So what we're talking about is affordability issues. If we get rid of all the jobs at Sappy, is that going to create greater affordability or less affordability?
Well, it's going to be a big greater affordability issues. I mean, in my mind, because
exactly, because all those families, what are they going to do?
What are they going to do?
Exactly.
Right? It all comes affordability is a math equation. It's how many dollars in do you get? How much do you have to spend, and how much do you have at the end? Right. And think places like Sappy pay well.
They do
create
well.
Jobs that bring new dollars in that then, as you said, multiplier, they spend it at other places.
Absolutely.
Like, and when I
every sandwich shop, every coffee shop, you go out and buy clothes, you got buy gasoline to get to work. I mean, there's a huge multiplier effect to any big employer, to any employer, but certainly to a big employer.
Well, and particularly I think about this a lot when I think about the right type of jobs to make sure that we create the conditions they exist here. Anything that sells things across borders of the state, right? So like paper, it could be a service. WEX, right, is one of those. IDEX, they bring new dollars in. That raises the dollars here.
Of course
that raises
does.
Prosperity for everyone, right? And that's the path to really being getting out of the affordability crisis. Is let's raise prosperity while we figure out how to cut costs at the same time.
You're obviously running for governor, so you're keenly aware of what's been going on here in the state over the last two decades. Do you think, and do you know the name John Jenkins by any chance? He used to be the mayor of Auburn. He was the mayor of Lewiston.
Oh, yeah.
Served in the state Senate. Great friend. He would come down here a lot, and he would talk about the fact when he was in the legislature, he never heard in the halls talking about how do we make people more prosperous. It was always, you know, about what's at the bottom of the barrel instead of trying to find ways to create an economic environment where people who are at the end of the economic ladder could be lifted by it. Do you think the people in Augusta, based on what you've observed, understand that they're the barrier to prosperity in Maine? Do you think they understand that? Or do you think they, if they do understand it, do they care?
I don't think they understand that they're the barrier to prosperity.
I mean, we have 110,000 yeah. rules in the state of Maine.
Right.
I'd see, 110,000. Yeah.
Right.
Rules and regulations.
Right.
For 1.39 million people.
Right.
110,000.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think they're so focused on whatever their one issue. Like, I think they lose, in the main terms, the forest from the trees yeah. sometimes. And they don't see, like, you know, the 80-20 rule. What's the few things we can do to make the biggest difference? And sometimes that is to do nothing, right? That,
right.
Right. It oftentimes is to do nothing.
I don't know if you saw this. Matty Daughtry, the Senate president, was walking around in some neighborhood with her dog talking about how the legislature was going to do a select blue ribbon commission on why property taxes are so high. And I'm thinking to myself, well, maybe you should look at your own actions. Do you think, I'm just asking you, and I'm not trying to create adversaries for you, but do you think there's an obtuse nature to the legislature where they just don't get complex issues?
Well, a few things. There is...
Or is it just rigid ideology?
I think there's some people that maybe don't get it. They go in with a cause and they just kind of along for the ride. There's others that whatever the talking point of the day that will keep them in power is the one that they'll use, whether or not it logically makes sense. I'm an engineer by background, right?
Yeah.
So when I see these things, I'm always like, well, what's the cause and effect? Like, how does those inputs change those outputs? And I think it's an ideology and a talking point to keep you in power issue a lot of times for some of the leaders. And then for others, I think there's good people with the right intentions out there that maybe may not have the right view on what the world needs or has an issue they care about, and then goes along for the ride and trusts the wrong people.
We talked about electricity and the
yep.
cost. It's driving up.
Yep.
We were the largest increase cost-wise.
36%, yeah.
From 36.3 to be exact.
Yep.
From May
I
of 24
it,
to,
anyways,
yeah, of course,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
to May of 25. You can do that in government.
Yeah,
you round.
Exactly.
Real people can't, but in government you can.
Yeah.
Anyhow.
I rounded real life, too.
Small modular nukes, but that's a long-term thing.
Yeah.
We all know this. Probably at least 5 years.
Yeah,
probably.
Yeah.
Buying more hydro from Canada. You got to get the legislature to remove the cap on renewables.
Yep.
The pipeline, which would come from Pennsylvania to New York, to Boston, to Massachusetts, to here. What else can you...
On electricity?
Yeah.
Solar stuff, like the net energy billing is 10%
right.
of...
Well, we all agree with that.
Yeah. So,
but it's just a boondoggle to get poor... To revert... We talk about it here with Matt. Do you know Matt Jacobson?
I do know Matt, yeah.
We talk with Matt every Tuesday about it. It's reverse Robin Hood. We're getting poor people to subsidize rich people so they can virtue signal about solar panels.
The other thing this is not fully baked yet, but I've been diving into, is we're talking a lot on the generation of electricity. Electricity costs.
Right.
Your bill is also transmission, and and there's a transmission cost, a big one in there, and I'm just looking at how we've set the system up, and it's we the CMP gets a percent of net assets. Basically, they're like a return on net assets is how they measure their profitability,
right.
their success,
yeah.
and their goals, and because of that, it's encourages them to build more stuff, which we do have the most unreliable grid in the country, most of the highest power outages out there, so it needs to happen. But we've got to, and this just needs people that know energy better than I do, which I would hire, we got to look at, is there a way to incentivize them on getting more efficient with how we use the existing grid that we have? And if you do that, like this is in healthcare, it's almost like value-based care.
Sure.
Right? Like lower costs, people stay healthier, you get a cut of the savings.
Right.
Is there a way to do the same thing on the distribution side? I am out on the limb here a little bit because I haven't fully studied this.
I think there is.
There's a there that needs to be tracked down.
I think you're onto something with that. We've talked about it some here, that we incentivize people and they get a cut of the savings.
Right.
But part of the problem CMP has faced is we have a PUC that is run by people who don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
They sat on an energy committee in the legislature for a couple of years, and now they're experts, but they don't have any background.
Yeah.
We have an office of energy in the governor's office.
No one that's worked in energy.
Yeah, exactly.
They
have no mechanical or engineering degree, none of that. They're philosophers, which is great. We love philosophers. That's fabulous. But it doesn't help bring down the cost of energy.
Yeah.
And so we got to hire, and you brought up hiring people.
Yeah.
Talk about that for a moment. Who's someone you would look at, and if you want to give a name, that's great, or you can just give a description, that you would look at to head up the Office of Energy in the state of Maine?
it's got to be someone that's worked in energy specifically that knows all the ins and outs, and particularly, I think, adjacent to or around the distribution side of energy, because I think that's the most nebulous part of it, but it's the one that will make the biggest difference. And then you need to surround someone that's worked in generation. You need to add in engineers. You probably need some lawyers, too, even though I always have, I mean, hesitate to say that, but you know.
Well, sometimes you have to pull the right lever.
Correct.
To either make something happen or stop something.
You need to know where the comma is,
right?
Is or is not to make it happen. And so you need someone that's worked in the industry. You need the people that know the science, and you need the people that know the commas. And you put those together, and that's what you get. You also need to make sure whoever is working in energy agrees with, and I actually don't think this is the case because there's mixed goals, that affordability is the number one goal.
Yeah, of course.
Right?
And that's it. And, you know, CMP, we were talking about that a little bit. Part of CMP's problem is having a PUC that doesn't know what they're doing, and also having an energy office that nobody worked in energy.
Right.
It's all theory, philosophical theory, if you will. But the other piece of it is they've been demonized by the public because the solar subsidies aren't paid to the government as a tax.
Right.
They're paid to CMP, which makes the bill go up. They have to rebuild infrastructure. They need to build out infrastructure to meet growing needs. It's a quagmire here.
It is. Though I will say, I mean, I've spent a lot of time across Maine, and I've met a lot of people. And from the Kiwanis clubs to the Republican town committees to the random, like, just gatherings I get together, the first question I get almost everywhere resoundingly is, what are we going to do about the solar panels? So the people of Maine have woken up to this, understand this, understand it's a government issue. And it's funny, though, Ray, I was talking with one of my competitors, gubernatorial candidate on the Democratic side, and I told them this. I said, look, solar panels, and they're like, wait, why would anyone hate solar panels? And that's where we're starting from, right? Which is the unawareness or the complete like disregard that affordability of people's electricity matters, and that which gives us a great advantage going into the general election,
right?
Because we can
the public gets it,
the ideologues don't, and that's a wedge we can drive to go and win an election, plus a few other things.
No, I think you're right about that. You know, they're inefficient here in the state of Maine. Yeah. They're ugly as sin. And what do you do with them when the lifespan's over 20 years from now? Because they leak. Mm. So you go and put them in the ground. We've got yet another problem.
Yeah.
This is not well thought out.
Yeah.
We chose Governor Mills and her effort to virtue signal about climate change.
Yeah.
Chose the two poorest ideas to create alternative energy. And they're the most expensive. They're the least efficient. Sounds like the entire Mills administration, frankly.
Yeah. I think that's right. The baseload energy is where it's at, and that's what we got to go figure out. Yeah,
so crazy. Can't believe it's been an hour. You got to come back more.
I would love to come back. Yeah, we got so many policy. We did 30 minutes of energy. I got a lot to talk about, a lot of things.
Exactly.
Right?
Well, let's get you back in here. Come back in next week then. That's fine. Whatever your schedule allows. We need a robust conversation with all of you guys. We got to choose the right person. The only way we do that is know more about you. So I know you were here right after you announced.
Yeah.
But we didn't spend a lot of time together. So I wanted people to get to know you as a person. I try to do that with all the guys in the first half hour. But going forward, we're going to just hit policy.
I love it.
Yeah. So we spent a half an hour on energy. We had a lot of stuff. If people were listening, you got some good ideas.
Excellent. Well, thanks. Thanks, Ray.
Owen for Maine. Owen for Maine.com.
Vote Owen McCarthy. Go to owenformaine.com.
Great to see you.
You too, Ray.
Let's do it again soon.
Love it.
728. At Community Pharmacy, we can provide all your durable medical equipment needs. We can also provide all your incontinence needs as well as your hospice care needs discreetly and delivered right to your door. Go to communityrx.com to find out more.
Medicare's annual enrollment period is right now. Did you receive a premium increase, reduction, or loss of benefits, or do you have questions about your plan? Casco Bay Associates can help. Call 207-200-8304.